What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of March to Madness here on the Overtime Sports Network. I am your host this evening, Kyle Gagliardi, and usually I got two guys with me, but as you can see, if you're watching this live right now, there's only one, Aaron Oros. Aaron, where's our third co-host at?
I think he got so excited that IU won three games in a row that he just couldn't function, couldn't figure out how to work his computer, his mic, or whatever issue he's dealing with. But I don't know.
He texted us, "I'm having issues." We already knew that Nickel had issues, but yeah. It sounds like he's having technical issues right now. So hopefully that we can bring him in here in a couple minutes. But it's just going to be me and Aaron for the time being until Nickel gets that all figured out. Because, of course, the one time I decide to go live, he's having issues. But Aaron, it's Valentine's Day. We're here talking about college basketball, and you're not hanging out with your fiance. What's going on?
Valentine's Day is dumb. It's the dumbest holiday on the planet. So I'm glad that both of us are in mutual agreement on that because, let me celebrate a day to treat your significant other, whoever it might be, better than what you already should. It's just such a stupid holiday. It's like, I don't understand it. So we don't really celebrate it. I'm here talking, gonna be talking basketball and drinking some Eagle Rare.
Oh, there it is. He's always got to have a glass of something next to us when we do these shows. And honestly, I wasn't expecting to do a show today. I woke up this morning, work was somewhat easy today, and I'm like, hey guys, why don't we do a show? And it's getting to that good part of the college basketball season, so it makes sense for us to crank out some more episodes as we move along into March. I think we're only a couple weeks away now from March, which is insane to think about, but let's start off the talk with what we usually start off with, and that is IU basketball. If you didn't know, now you know. We are all Indiana grads, so we're going to talk about the Hoosiers. And the Hoosiers, surprisingly, Aaron, are 18-7, ranked 14th in the country, coming off huge quad one wins, defeating at the time number one Purdue, followed by Rutgers at home, and then Michigan on the road. So the last time we talked, Aaron, we were preaching about how huge it would be for them to just split in the week of Maryland and Purdue. They lose to Maryland earlier in that week. Later on, the Boilermakers, our rival, coming to town, and the Hoosiers take care of business at home. They storm the court. Everybody's having a good time, but it started there, and here we are on a three-game winning streak now. But let's go to that Purdue game. We talked about it, like I said. All you got to do is just take one of those games. Surprisingly, they do it against the best team in the country at the time. What was your reaction? I know we were watching together, but you had to be a little bit surprised.
I was a lot of bit surprised, especially coming off that dreadful Maryland game. I figured they did the typical look-ahead game, come out flat on the road. I know Maryland's good at home. I don't care. It would have been different if they would have played well, but they played horrible. So I'm going into this game thinking, all right, great. They just dropped a game, the look ahead game. So now they're going to come out and play like crap again at home and get blown out by Purdue. But I got to give them credit. I mean, they basically did to a T one of the ways that you have to beat Purdue. I mean, obviously they shot really well, but they let Edie get his. They go ahead and score. Trace did a really good job of not hacking him and not fouling him. And Trace obviously got his too. I think Edie's weakness, at least on the defensive end, is if you put an athletic big against him, I mean, he's a big dude. It's hard for him to move and keep up with a guy like Trace. Dickinson had his way too with Michigan. And now he's nowhere near as athletic as Trace is. So, Trace came to play, supporting cast, hit big shots when we had to. I mean, we jumped out early on them and then they started catching up. You knew Purdue would make a run. They're not the number one team for a reason to not make a run. But then I was thinking to myself, oh, here we go again. I was about to blow this game after winning, you know, after dominating the first half. But Jalen Hood-Schifino hit that big layup at the end, and they got a huge win. And that huge win, you know, obviously propelled them to win the next two. They needed it. Obviously, I think that win right there could change the entire rest of the year. I mean, I think it really did spark them because they proceeded to win the last two. So huge. I mean, it's the biggest win maybe IU has had in the last
You could say since 2013, the last time they beat a number one team was 2013 against Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, this arguably could be the biggest win in almost a decade, or basically a decade. So, you know, I'm ecstatic. I thought they were dead in the water after Maryland, but looks like not. Looks like the talent's starting to show up. And Trace, I mean, we can spend all day talking about him. I mean, he's just been huge. He's been so good.
We definitely are going to talk a little bit more about him. But, like, once that game tipped off, the Hoosiers were actually betting favorites, which wasn't too surprising. I mean, we talked about it on the last episode. IU comes to play in big games at Assembly Hall. It doesn't matter what team is out on the court. They usually show up. The fans definitely showed up. The atmosphere was tremendous in Assembly Hall that night. And obviously, the students got to enjoy the court storm a little bit, which a lot of people hate on. Where do you stand on this whole storming the court situation?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, it's the first time IU's done something in a decade to beat a number one team. So it's like, I really don't think too much of it. If the fans want to storm the court, storm the court. I really don't care. I'm not losing sleep at night because we stormed the court against Purdue. You know what I mean? It's like, I think it's.
I was gonna ask you, what would 20-year-old Aaron Oroz at IU be doing in that situation?
I'd be there. I'd be on the court. I've never stepped foot on Assembly Hall. Why not?
Me neither. I would be doing the same thing.
How many times are you able to say that in life that you got to storm the court at IU? You know, not a lot of
people. We didn't get to say it, and we went there for 3.5 to 4 years, so. That says a lot right there. But, yeah, definitely one of the bigger wins. Let's see if we can get our third co-host here all situated. Nickel, can you hear us? And let's see if we can hear you.
Well, I heard you before. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. You're jumping in right now as we talk about the Hoosiers.
All right.
Yeah. So let's get your thoughts. We're kind of just starting with the Purdue game here. Talked about how Jalen Hood-Schifino made some big shots. Trey showed up. And just the atmosphere as a whole in that upset win. What were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually just really surprised how they came out in that first half. I mean, they just looked like a totally different team. For prior Purdue games, they just, you know, hit the pedal to the metal and didn't look back. I mean, the second half there kind of got a little shaky, but you know what? This is a team that's going to finish those games now. And, yeah, Trace was awesome, even though, you know, it was against Zach Edey. I know Zach Edey has this game too, but, you know, Trace, he put up the numbers. And then, you know, Hood-Schifino, you know, IU's guards outplayed Purdue's, you know, freshman guards. So that was huge. But overall, I mean, that was one you would like to get at Assembly, and they did. So it's a good resume builder, number one team. It was the first one since, you know, 2013 that we beat. So, yeah, huge win.
Yeah, and we were talking about one of the keys to IU potentially winning that game was – you know, taking advantage of those young and inexperienced guards that Purdue has. And that seemed to definitely be the case there on Saturday. But like I said earlier, they followed up that Purdue win with wins over Rutgers and a big come from behind road win against a hot Michigan team this past Saturday. And Nickel, that Rutgers game just seemed like the classic Indiana letdown spot. And it wasn't the prettiest game by any means, but once again, Hoosiers found a way to win at home.
Yeah, I look back of last year after they beat Purdue at home. They had the home game against Michigan after that, you know, the prior week, and they lost that. So I'm glad that, you know, this Rutgers game, they came out ready to play. I think they looked good. So, yeah, it was great not to have that letdown game. And everybody, you know, did their part to win that game. And that was I think Rutgers has their number over the past 6 or 7 years. So
the last six matchups, Trace Jackson Davis had never beaten Rutgers to that point.
Crazy to think about because, you know, Rutgers just entered the Big Ten. Not a lot of people think of them as a school to really think about Big Ten wise. So I'm glad we finally got a win against Rutgers.
Tough week for Rutgers in general. They had to play Illinois at Illinois and they lost that game, I believe. They were leading too in that one. But Aaron, like I said, that Rutgers game could have easily been a letdown spot and they prevailed.
Well, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. I really did think, you know, I thought they had the look ahead game against Maryland, as I alluded to earlier. And then the proverbial letdown spot after a huge, huge win. And over the past handful of years, that's been typical IU. But, and Rutgers is obviously no easy team to beat. I don't care if it's at home. Right. And they got the job done. And good teams. And Indiana, you know, didn't play great in that game, but one of the big marks of a good team is still winning games, even though you don't play your best basketball. So that was huge. And then obviously, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about here next, the Michigan game, which I thought was even bigger. I think that more exemplifies breaking that IU mold of finding ways to win. So I don't know if you want to go into that now or not, but
yeah, no, we can't. Cause I brought up the fact that they were trailing and they came back in that one, and typical IU kind of probably would have folded in that situation, especially on the road, but this team just kept it in striking distance. Were there a few things that you guys noticed in that game that led to that comeback for IU?
Well, their defense intensity stepped up at the end because, hell, both teams, both IU and Michigan, were not shooting well in that last 9 minutes or so. I think both teams went without a field goal for close to 7 minutes. It was just pretty much, you know, going to the free throw line. But, IU's defense has been kind of questionable this year. I think a lot of people thought it would be better than it is right now. I think they're like in the 40s in defense efficiency in KenPom. So last year, I believe they were in the 20s. So not as good as last year, but lately their defense has been better. And I think that's really what won them that game. Trace went to the line to finish it. He couldn't do it. So luckily Miller Kopp, his defense stepped up against Jet Howard, forced that terrible, you know, shot air ball at the end of the game. And yeah, I think the defense was huge for that game.
There just seems to be a new life in this team. You know, everything is clicking for them right now. And they still are missing Xavier Johnson, which is crazy. But Aaron, was there anything additionally you'd like to add on about that comeback against Michigan?
Well, I not necessarily, I guess, the comeback, but things I guess you can kind of look to going forward. I would say everything, you know, like you said, that's a game they typically lose. And they played ugly and still found a way to win. But I'm telling you, especially with this gauntlet of road games they got going on in the Big Ten, they are not going to continue to win if they don't start getting help from the supporting cast. Tamar Bates has been a ghost. He doesn't exist on the floor.
I was going to say, we talked about him being inconsistent last week, but he just hasn't shown up at all in the last couple
years. He's been horrible. And then Trey Galloway on the road has been non-existent. I know Mike Woodson had talked to Bates and Galloway and told them both, hey, we need you guys to step up. We got a handful of road games on the Big Ten. We're going to need you. You can't just rely on Trace. And now Jalen Hood-Schifino played really well against Michigan. But again, the supporting cast needs some help. And, you know, a guy who I think is not getting enough opportunities, especially in the offense, is Miller Kopp. I mean, a guy who played horrible last year, shooting like 45, 46% from three this year, playing really good defense as well. I just don't think they put enough effort in getting him the ball. I mean, I just think he's out there and he's kind of doing the little stuff, but I think they need to start working some stuff through him. There's just too many times he's on the court where he's not getting any open looks. No, it doesn't seem like any set plays are being run for him. I understand you want to move the ball through Trace, but I've seen it quite a few times where Trace gets the ball down low and finds a way to find Miller Kopp and he knocks down three. So I think he needs to get more involved. Maybe Mike Woodson can figure that part out. But again, the supporting cast is going to have to show up. They are, you know, they're not going to be able to win games moving forward if they don't. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to as they go against Northwestern. That's Wednesday, right? Tomorrow?
Yep, tomorrow night.
Northwestern, yep. So we'll see.
Going off that, Aaron, I think the big thing is, you know, when Hood-Schifino and Trace play well, they really don't – I don't think they really need that third guy just because – like you said, they're trying to get, you know, Trace the ball. Yeah. But I think when they need that third guy is when Hood-Schifino's not there. And I think when they've been winning the games they've been winning, someone else does step up. Like Tamar had that game against Michigan State. Trey Galloway had that game, I think, against Rutgers. No one had that game, though, against Maryland. That's why they lost that game. So when Hood-Schifino's not there and it's only Trace, that's when they run into some issues. So I know lately Hood-Schifino's been playing better. So I think it's when those two guys – it's good. You would also like to have that third guy. But like you said, it's hard trying to find shots because Trey Galloway, the last game, did not play that bad. He just didn't have any shots. I mean, I think he was 2 from 4 for the floor. So he shot 50%. He's just not taking enough shots. Same with Miller Kopp. And like I said, I think that's hard when you have Hood-Schifino and Trace out there. But when Hood-Schifino's not there, or sometimes maybe Trace is not playing his best, you need that third guy. And I agree with that. But I don't know who it would be.
Yeah, especially if any of those guys get into foul trouble. You never know what's going to happen after that. But Aaron, I like you bringing up Miller Kopp. I mean, that's a guy that we've probably critiqued a lot on this show in past years and maybe even in this year. But credit where credit is due, the man has stepped up and he's got another big game potentially against his former squad tomorrow night at Northwestern, which the cheapest ticket for tomorrow night's game in Evanston is $240, which is insane. But I guess that's what happens when the Hoosiers come to town and when Purdue comes into town, because we saw how that atmosphere was. We'll talk about that, though, in a little bit. But let's continue to talk about the Hoosiers and more specifically Trace Jackson Davis. I mean, we've talked about what he's meant to this team, and he stepped up big time over the past 12 games. Absolutely nuclear right now, averaging 23.3 points per game, 13.9 rebounds, and 4 assists in his last 12. I mean, this is a guy that we knew going into the season. He's an All-American. He's going to be one of the best players in the country. You could honestly say in the past 10 games or so, he is the best player in the country and maybe even the Big Ten Player of the Year, Aaron. I know you were looking up stats. I'm sure Nickel was too, of Big Ten play by itself. I think you can make a case that Trace might be more deserving than Zach Edey.
Oh, you can make more than a case. I mean, his stats all around are just so solid. And again, the guy just shows up night in and night out. I mean, again, I don't want to take anything away from Zach Edey whatsoever, but the dude's like 7'4". It's like, it's not incredibly difficult for him to get rebounds, for him to get points down low.
Putbacks.
Yeah, right. And so, and especially with the serves that IU's making right now, it'd be one thing if IU was not ranked and struggling, then it's like, well, it's kind of hard to give him Big Ten Player of the Year maybe, but
yeah.
I think, and man, I wish I'd have wrote this down, but I know he's the first player in Big Ten history with over 2,000 points, over 1,000 rebounds, over, I think it's like 200 assists and over however many blocks.
He leads Indiana in blocks in the history of the
right. And I think it's like over maybe, I don't know what the block number is, but I mean, when you're number one or the only player to do something in the Big Ten's history, I mean, that's saying something. The guy's taking a step up, didn't think he had a step up. Just imagine if he could shoot, but I think he's sort of mastered his craft at what he's good at, and he's carrying him. I mean, they'd be nowhere without him. He's been tremendous, and I think if it continues, I don't know how. I mean, people keep making it seem like Edie's a shoe-in. I don't know how that's the case right now. I think it's got to be close, and if Trace keeps playing the way he's playing, I don't know how you can argue.
And he's doing it against top competition, too. He's showing up in big games. Nickel, anything you'd like to add about Trace's performance recently?
Well, that's the thing, too, is like Trace is pretty much a one-dimensional player down low because all his baskets is either at the free throw line or under the basket. So, you know, we all thought maybe he would take that step of, you know, hitting some jump shots or maybe hitting an occasional three, but he really doesn't need to do that. So,
need it.
I think the big thing, and I think I mentioned this in our group message, I think using his athleticism a little bit more this year than in years past. You know, he has the better block numbers. I think he's averaging more than like 4 rebounds a game than last year. I just think he's, you know, I know he's a big dunk machine in years past, but this year it's just been like crazy. I mean, his alley-oops, you know, sometimes like against Hunter Dickinson's matching up well, and then he just does a spin move and just dunks it with his left hand, like
with ease.
Effortless. Yeah, it's just insane. So I think he has taken that step. His athleticism is insane. I don't know where IU would be without him. I really don't. But I think this is a reason that this team could go, you know, Sweet 16 and beyond this year. My confidence level has never been higher for this team over the last
that's
6 years.
So that's scary.
Everything, but yeah, Trace is just, I mean, he's just a great and fun player to watch. It's awesome to see.
He's definitely one of the best Indiana basketball players of all time. Hands down, he's in my top 5. And we talk about this in past seasons going into the tournament. Sometimes it only takes one guy. One guy can carry you in the NCAA tournament. Granted, you're going to need the role players to step up and hit timely shots and make big defensive plays. But if you have one guy that's consistently putting up numbers like he is right now, if he's doing this in March, IU's going to be a tough out. But next up, obviously, Northwestern, who's coming off their biggest win of the season against the Purdue Boilermakers as well. So it's going to be a tough one at Northwestern tomorrow night. But let's go to that upset then with Northwestern and Purdue. One of the few college basketball games going down on Super Bowl Sunday. And it was definitely a good one. And the Wildcats protected their home court against the Boilermakers, defeating them 64-58 when they were trailing in the majority of this one. Nickel, I'm assuming you watched this. Another big win for Northwestern, still not ranked in the top 25.
Well, I actually didn't watch it because it was a nice day on Sunday. We were out on the golf course. Oh. So we did I did catch the end of it. I was actually looking on my phone probably the last 8 minutes of that game, and at one point they were up 8, Purdue was. And then I think we walked into the clubhouse and they were down 4 and about to lose the game. I did watch the highlights, though. I think what cost them that game, I think this is the way to beat Purdue. You press them, full court press them, because those freshman guards, you know, Fletcher Lawyer, Brendan Smith, they get a little nervous and they turn the ball over a lot when they get pressed. And I think IU did a little bit of that. Northwestern really did a lot of that down the stretch. And they had, I think, 6 or 7 turnovers the last 4.5 minutes of that game. So maybe that's the formula to beat Purdue, is try to pressure the guards. Because honestly, you know, Purdue has a lot of great role players. Everybody knows their role. Edie's a menace down low. But if you don't have those two freshman point guards playing like, you know, they do play some games where they look great, it's a beatable team. And that's, you know, when Brendan Smith went 1 for 8 against IU, they lost. You know, I think, you know, Fletcher Lawyer, he only had 1 basket against Northwestern. They lost. So you pressure those guards, I think that's the formula to beat Purdue. And Northwestern definitely showed that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Aaron, you talked about it earlier. Zach Edey, he's always going to get his. You're really not going to stop Zach Edey. And that happened in this game regardless. But the next highest score was Braden Smith only getting 10. It seems like Purdue's going to need a little bit more help than just Zach Edey, because, you know, Northwestern's a solid team, but there's going to be better teams in the tournament come March.
Yeah, you just let him get his. You can't foul him. You can't get in a foul trouble, because – naturally, if you get into foul trouble because everyone keeps fouling Edey, you help Purdue in general because they end up going to the line because of the bonus. You know, you let him get his and you stop everybody else. And I think that's just the formula right now, because, like Nickel said, I mean, they got 2 freshmen that they were relying a lot on. And then you start putting the pressure on. I think Northwestern's game plan is exactly how you beat him. You let Edey get his. You don't foul him. You just try and play good defense. If he makes it, great. But then you put the pressure on all the other players. And if they don't perform, like Nickel said, they're a very, very beatable team. I think you're starting to see the formula on how to beat them. Now, granted, it's one thing to see it, and there's one thing to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot easier said than done to do that. Northwestern just did it. But again, yeah, it's going to be interesting come March. You know, if you put them against a team that can do that efficiently, they got a chance to get beat. So, you know, it's not – Northwestern's a solid team. They're playing really good basketball. But, again, we might just have seen the formula on how to beat Purdue.
And granted, going to Northwestern and going to Assembly Hall are not easy games, so I wouldn't be freaking out if I was a fan of the Boilermakers. And like we've discussed, if there's any year where any team can really go out and win the whole damn thing, it's probably this year, because there's not that – you know, definitive elite team, at least in my opinion and most people's opinion. But let's move along from Purdue a little bit and just focus in on tomorrow's game then, because you have 2 teams coming off huge wins. Northwestern, I mean, we know how IU can be on the road at times. Are we expecting Indiana to become prepared in this game, or is this a worrisome game for us? What do we think?
Well, it's of course going to be a worrisome game, because if they lose to Northwestern, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. But I think this is going to be one of those tough fought games. I mean, Northwestern's going to play good defense, so this is going to be a game where they're going to need Trace Jackson Davis. Northwestern doesn't have an answer for him.
No,
not very many people do. So again, we got to work our offense through there. This is all going to be about how efficiently we can be on offense, because Northwestern's going to play good defense. So the amount of limited shots we're going to get, our open shots we're going to get, are going to be limited. So I think, again, it's going to be another game that, where the role players, if like in the Maryland game, if Trace is getting double teamed and he's kicking it out to an open Tamar Bates or an open Trey Galloway, and those guys aren't making shots, then we're in big trouble. You know what you're getting when you play against Northwestern. So it's going to be one of those. I think it's going to be a lot, almost like the second half of that Michigan game, where you're going to see, a low 60s final for both teams. It's going to be that type of game. But again, I don't think Northwestern has an answer for Trace. I don't think they had an answer for Edie. It's going to be, can IU's role players come to play? So I think that's what ultimately it's going to come down to. If IU's role players play, if Tamar Bates can show up a little bit, Hood Schifino, Galloway, if those guys show up, I think they can get the win. But that's a big if.
That it is. Nickel, anything you'd like to add on before?
I'm hoping Mike Woodson talks to these players and be like, hey, we let them come to Assembly. That was our only loss at Assembly this year and embarrassed us. I mean, I know it ended up being a one-point game, but they weren't even close that, majority of that game. They were down 14, 15 points until like the last, 3-4 minutes when free throws came in a factor. But I would hope these players want redemption and, come out and go to Evanston and beat Northwestern on their home floor. I don't think it's going to be any type of blowout. I think this is going to be a hard-fought game to the end, just like that Michigan one. Like Aaron said, Northwestern's a great defensive team. They're going to know how to defend our guards. Hopefully Trace plays well. Is there a line out yet for this game? I didn't even see, but
I deleted my betting app after
probably another close one. So
I'll see if I pick it up. Unless Kyle, you're looking.
Yeah,
it up.
No, go ahead. No, see if you can.
If I had a guess, I'm going to see if I can guess. I'll look it up. I'm going to say, I bet it's IU minus
3.5. Ooh, you think it's lower?
I think it's 1.5 too.
All right, let us know.
IU Northwestern line.
IU's upcoming schedule at Northwestern.
Northwestern, our favorite to defeat Indiana by 1 point.
Northwestern, the 1 point favorite.
Okay, so that's kind of
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me after they just beat Purdue, the number one team.
But it seems like a Northwestern letdown spot, too, and coming off the biggest win, arguably, in program history.
But you could also see it being, IU just had a road win. They come to this, they're not going to win two road games in a row. I mean, that's probably Vegas is thinking, too. But I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be upset if it was a hard-fought game and they lost, just like the Michigan one. Northwestern, it's not an easy out anymore, especially this year. I think I said that earlier. They're a tough team. They are defending their home court, so it should be a good game.
Yeah, a couple other games before we get to overrated and underrated. Another big upset, Stanford defeating number 4 Arizona, 88-79. Aaron, Stanford has a losing record this year, and they protected their home court and somehow beat the Wildcats. How the fuck does that happen?
That's a good question. That was one of the, I look at the final score and I'm like, what in the hell just happened there? I don't even want to say his name. I don't want to butcher it. If somebody knows to talk, what's Arizona's best player? I was talking to a Mokel Arizona fan, said that he only had 4 points in that game.
Yeah. Well,
did not come to play in that game. I didn't watch it. But when your best player scores 4 points, I could see why that might be a problem. Stanford stinks this year, and Arizona, they're obviously good and they've been playing really well at the time. One of those question mark games where you're like, how did they just lose? So I really don't have an explanation.
And this is not Arizona's first time, because they lost to Utah, they lost to Washington State, and then now they just lost to Stanford. Those are three non-tournament teams. And then they also lost to Oregon, who's a bubble right now. So that's four losses for Arizona. So Arizona's kind of an up and down team. I still think they're a top 15, top 10 team, but they just have those weird losses in there. That's two quad three losses for Arizona. That's pretty bad for a top tier team.
Anarchy?
Nope, just college basketball.
That's right, Nickel. let's move on. Baylor gets a big conference win on the road at TCU by a score of 72-68. Adam Flagger went off, scoring 28 in this one. But TCU, who a lot of people have had their eyes on this year, seem to be struggling a bit. But I think we can credit some of that to missing a few players, wouldn't you say, Aaron?
They're missing their best player.
That did not help whatsoever. And TCU was, and they were up, I think they were up like 3 or 4 at half. And then at one point they were up double digits, I think. And I thought, all right, wow, they're going to really beat Baylor shorthanded. And then next thing I look, Baylor's up by like 4 with like 2 minutes left. So I think Baylor's really good. So, and again, I need TCU shorthanded. What's going to be interesting, and this might be looking ahead a little bit too much, but I could see TCU sliding just because they're without some really good players, and then getting one of those weird, like, I don't know, like a 5 or 6 seed and end up being a real problem once they get healthy. I would not count them out. I'm not taking a whole lot of stock in their losses. That's a team come March that could screw somebody over just because they got a higher seed or lower seed because of a lot of injuries. So, you know, they played tough too in that game. Baylor's really good. Like, Baylor's really caught their stride, I think, right now, and the easily best conference in college basketball. So, you know, it's a good win for Baylor, but at the same time, TCU's hurting right now because of injuries. So, once they get healthy, which I hopefully eventually they do before the tournament starts, I still think they're a dark horse team to maybe make a little bit of noise. So,
I totally agree, because missing your top player who's averaging like 18.5 points per game, shooting over 40% from three, that's a huge loss. And I think if they do get him back, I don't know exactly what his injury is. I think it's some type of knee injury. But if they do get him back for the tournament, yeah, I agree. I think they could maybe be a 6 or 7 seed at that point, because the Big 12's tough. They're not going to – I mean – it's hard to win games in the Big 12. It's definitely the best conference, I think. So if they go into the tournament as like a 7 seed or something, that's a team to watch out for.
Scary.
Yeah, imagine being 2 seed and your second game is against TCU, a healthy TCU nonetheless. That would be pretty scary. But I totally agree. I think Baylor's really got what it takes to make another national title push, which is crazy, the turnaround of that program over the past decade. But let's go to one more thing, one past game, and it was last Friday when Butler – upset number 13 Xavier 69-67. Xavier is now 19-6, having a really solid year, but this isn't a good loss whatsoever. Nickel, does Xavier have enough to make a deep run in March, or would you be worried about the Musketeers?
Another team that's missing a very good player in Zach Fremantle. Presence down low, it's hard. I know it's no excuse to probably lose to Butler, but it's just another team that's kind of been bitten by the injury bug. But Xavier's main issue, too, is defense. And that really showed that game, too. In every game they've lost this year, their defense has just let them down. I mean, they also lost to DePaul. So they lost, you know, against Butler, DePaul, two of the worst teams in the Big East. But their offense, I mean, when they get hot, I think they're one of the best, you know, three-point shooting teams in the nation. I think they're top 10. So Xavier is going to be a team that lives by their offense and their three-point shooting. So if they're hot around tournament time, I could see Xavier going far, but that defense has to be better and they have to get healthy.
I personally think they just need a little bit more consistency, Aaron. I don't know about you.
Well, the Fremantle loss is huge. He's out for a few weeks. He's out like 3 or 4 weeks. He's like the life and soul of that Xavier team. And granted, Xavier does play horrendous defense, so I think that gives them the ability to lose to basically anybody at any given time. But that is a big, big loss. So we'll see how it goes on throughout the year, because I think he's probably done until maybe conference tournament.
At least play it safe with him at that point, because you know you're going to be in.
Right. But again, you know, if the injuries start getting tough, and I mean, that's a big loss. So I think this is one of those teams that is almost like the Tom Crean IU teams, where they could beat anybody if their offense is hot, but then they could lose to anybody because they play no defense. So
yeah,
that's who they kind of remind me of. So yeah, I guess we'll see. But without Fremantle, it could be interesting.
Yeah, that is a good comparison. So let's move on over to overrated, underrated. And we're only a month away from Selection Sunday, which is pretty crazy to think about. So you might want to pay a little bit of attention to this segment. We'll start with overrated. Aaron, I'll let you go first. Which one team that's a little overrated right now?
Well, so I took a look at the rankings for the first time today, and I had to like triple take when I – granted, this team is very talented. But when you look at their schedule, I don't know how they have any business being in the top 5. But UCLA at number 4 makes no sense to me whatsoever. And I'll dive in here. So, granted, I know it was early in the year, but they lost to Illinois, who kind of is not what we thought they would be. They lose to Baylor. They played Zona once, lost. They lost to USC, who's not the typical USC. Their only ranked wins on the year are against Kentucky at the time, who stinks.
Yeah.
And Maryland, they gave Maryland their only home loss. Or was that on a neutral court? Regardless, I don't even care.
No, that was at neutral court. That was in Vegas.
Okay. Who is not ranked? And I'm not saying that Maryland's a bad team, but at the same time, it's just like...
Oh, wait, no. The Maryland game, that was at Maryland.
Yeah, it was. Okay. I think they gave Maryland their only home loss.
Yes.
Again, though, maybe it's a sneaky good win, but at the same time, and then, you know, they only have four losses. But then after that, it's like, okay, they've beaten up on the Pac-12 a little bit, which really is pretty down this year.
Not great.
I just don't know how you have them at four over the laundry list of teams behind them. I saw that, and I don't know. I feel like they've lost to all the really good teams that they've faced this year. And I know on paper they are a really good team, All-American, Jacquez. I don't know. I saw them at four, and it didn't make sense to me. I'm not saying that they're not good. I'm not saying they don't deserve to be in the top 10. I'm just saying right now, looking at their schedule and looking at their body of work, I don't believe they deserve to be the number four team in the country.
So you're saying if UCLA is on the bracket at the 1, 2, or 3 spot, maybe they get upset in the second round?
So from what I've seen so far, I mean, against the better teams, they are not winning. And I know
those upsets happen every year too.
They do. Oh, yeah. I know Baylor and Illinois were early in the year, and that's, you know, kind of where you're, you know, that's okay. But I mean, then they played Zona in the middle of the year, lost. USC is not the USC we've seen in the past, lost. So I don't know. That Kentucky win means absolutely nothing to me at this point because I think they stink. So
yeah,
I would agree. Know. Kentucky stinks, and we're gonna go on the record saying fuck Kentucky because Kentucky is ass. All right, Nickel. He's going with UCLA as his overrated. Who's overrated in your opinion?
I'm going to have to go Tennessee.
Again?
You know, I didn't have Tennessee last time.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We talked about Tennessee.
We did.
National title contender.
They do stink. Well, they don't stink. But
they're ranked number 10 in the new AP poll, and they've lost 3 of their last 4, and some of those losses are Florida, Vanderbilt, Missouri. I know 2 of them were on last-second buzzer beaters, but can't
lose. At home.
Yeah, can't lose to those teams. Yeah, especially Missouri at home. And they're the only top 25 team that has 4 quad 2 losses. I don't think there's another team that has 3. So not sure how the AP voters still love this Tennessee team being that high as a top 10 team. I just don't see it. They're not playing great basketball. Their defense is one of the top in the country, but they cannot score at all. I mean, I know 2 of those losses, they scored under 56 points. You're not going to win in March doing that. So
no.
I think Tennessee is very, very overrated right now.
I get solid pick. So on the opposite side of the spectrum, underrated. A team flying under the radar right now, Aaron Oros.
Now, I know the ACC isn't the greatest conference in the world, but would it surprise you to tell you that the Pittsburgh Panthers are tied for first in the ACC right now?
Yeah, because I did not know that.
Neither did I until
Aaron, I'm going to say that right now. This is my honorable mention as my underrated.
I was looking, and I'm like looking at the standings just to get because I was stuck between a couple teams. Then I'm like, wait a minute, Pittsburgh is tied for the ACC lead right now, Virginia and Miami. I'm like, wait, what? So then I start looking at their schedule. They beat Virginia, they beat UNC twice, they beat NC State, who I think is a really good team. They were my underrated last week. They beat Miami, who's ranked, and they beat Wake Forest, who also I think is a pretty solid team in the ACC as well. So, you know, they've won 5 games in a row. They got 4 guys that average double digits.
And it's nice to have balance.
They got 2 guys that average over 15 points a game. So, you know, I watched that Virginia game, and I thought it was kind of a fluke, but I guess not. I mean, they're not ranked either, and they're leading – or tied for first amongst 2 other teams in the ACC. So I think we got to start giving them some mention here. I think that I don't know how you're not ranked and you're tied for a major conference lead at this point in the season. So I struggle between them and Nevada. I don't know if that's one of your other teams, but I was close on the Nevada Wolfpack. But
when was the last time Pittsburgh was even good at basketball?
Go.
A few years ago, they were a tournament team, but
it's just a name you really don't talk about.
No, you don't.
Pre COVID, they were pretty decent.
Yeah, maybe COVID ruined the Pittsburgh Panthers. That's where they are, Panthers, right?
Panthers, yeah.
Got it. So I did not know that, Aaron. So that's a great choice. Definitely going to keep my eyes on them now. All right, Nicole, what's yours?
I like Oklahoma State recently. They're a team that's now receiving votes, but they're playing like a top 15 team right now, I think, in the Big 12, which is a tough conference. They've won 7 of the last 8 with 2 wins against Iowa State. Iowa State right now is ranked top 20, you know, top 15. And they have the fifth best defensive efficiency in college basketball right now. This is a team that had a rough start in the beginning, but right now in Big 12 play, they're right up there with the top. I think they have 8 wins or 9 wins in the Big 12. And this is a team to watch out for in March, I believe. Right now, I think they have them as an 8 or a 7 seed.
They're good.
I want to be surprised if they're maybe a 6 or a 5 come March, and they're playing really good basketball right now. So watch out for Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Rothstein had a big thing on them. He had talked about on Twitter about that's a team to look out for because they're playing some really, really good
basketball. And they have a great game tonight at 8 o'clock against Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
At Kansas State. So at Oklahoma State. Yep. Big game.
Interesting. I might have to tune into that one. We're about an hour and 20 minutes away from that. So there it is. Overrated, underrated. Definitely keep an eye out for those teams because we are only, like I said, a month away from Selection Sunday. So let's take a peek at some of the bigger games coming up this week. We already did talk about a few of them, some of them happening tonight, tomorrow. But we got a big one happening tomorrow, and the main event is Alabama, the number one team, at number 10, Tennessee, who Nickel just talked about being a little overrated. They are struggling, like you said, as of late. But do you think they can take care of business at home, or is Alabama going to continue to roll like they've been?
Well, this is your – if you're Vegas right now, this is your – Tennessee's been struggling, but they're still a good team. They need to pick up a big win, and all the bettors will be on Bama. And Tennessee ends up winning. That's what is rolling in my head right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's rolling in my head right now with the way college basketball has been this year. It's like, oh, Tennessee stinks, so all the money will be on Bama, and then Tennessee ends up winning that game. So in the Rolodex going on in my head is thinking that. But at the same time, it's like Bama is a wagon, so – it would not surprise me in the slightest if they just blew the doors off Tennessee. But then again, I'm curious what that spread is. I don't know. I don't know if it's out or not, but that would be a really good indication that Vegas is thinking what's going on in my head. So,
yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's one of those weird games where it's like everyone's going to be betting Bam, and then obviously, and then Tennessee somehow ends up winning. So, I think this is a tougher one to predict. I'm glad I'm not going to bet on it because I have no idea. I probably end up falling for Alabama and then they end up losing. So it's one of those, I think this is a pretty good indication of where Tennessee season is going to go on from here, because if they end up losing this game too, I think it's like, okay, we might have to start pushing them out of the, you know, top 15, top 20 teams in the country. And, but I guess we'll see. But then if they win against Alabama, they'll be like, oh, I told you Tennessee is a top 10 team. Yeah. So we'll see.
I'm trying to find the betting line, but Nickel, you can go ahead.
It might not be out.
Yeah, you just never know with a home team. And I know, like you said, Tennessee is going to be itching for this win, just getting, you know, beat off a last second buzzer beater against Missouri. But Alabama has the offense to compete with Tennessee's defense. You know, you have a great freshman in Brandon Miller. Tennessee contains them. Maybe they can win. Lately Tennessee just can't score, and I know Alabama's defense, they're not a terrible defense either. So if they hold to Tennessee under 60 points, I think they win this game easily. But at the same time, I could also see Tennessee, you know, we need this win. We're playing at home. We're going to shut down Brandon Miller, and then Tennessee wins. So like you said, I'm glad I'm not betting it, because even though I don't know the line, I would have no idea what's going to happen in this game.
Yeah, I can't seem to find the line, so it's probably not even out yet since it's happening tomorrow night.
I bet Bama ends up being favorite, but by like 1.5, 2 points maybe. I don't know.
They definitely should. Yeah, I think I lost connection, didn't we?
You're good. You're good.
All right, you're good now. Or not.
No, he's good now.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
we lost
them. I'm hosting the show now.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I'm glad I'm not betting that game. That game would be a disaster, because I'd end up betting Bama and they'd lose, because college basketball is impossible. to bet on.
I took Oklahoma State tonight, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, God. What is that spread?
I was getting 2.
Okay. I'm curious what the over-under is in that game.
141, I believe, and a half, something like that.
I don't like that, but I'm not gambling, so.
Oh, I was going to say, are you still gambling? I know you hit big on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, 2 squares. First, I've never hit a square in my entire life, and I hit 2 squares worth over $3,000.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's insane.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm like looking at Scott Square in the third quarter, and I'm like, holy shit. This.
Yeah, you didn't even realize it until about 5 minutes left.
I didn't.
Probably how it would have been, too.
I honestly didn't. And then, like, Keela and I have squares, and I'm like, looking, and I'm like, wait a minute. And then when McKinnon slid instead of scored, and I'm like, holy shit, we have a chance here. And oh, yeah, it was crazy.
Good day. That was a bad beat for some when he slid. Smart decision in the grand scheme of things for the Kansas City Chiefs, but for people that had numbers and bet on the game, that would have been a very frustrating move. That is gambling. So we got a few more games. Let's talk about coming up. Number 16, Xavier at number 11, Marquette tomorrow as well. Marquette is a team I feel like not many people are talking about and definitely should be, Nickel.
Yeah, what, the ranked, what, 11? 11? Yeah, this Marquette team, I haven't watched a lot of them this year, but they're one of the top teams in the Big East. They've won a lot of tough games. Shaka Smart, he's, you know, ever since he left Texas there, he's, that Marquette team's been pretty damn good. So, the last 2 years. Yeah, they're a team. I think they, is this at Marquette, you said?
Yeah, at Marquette.
Yeah, tomorrow. I think they win this game without, you know, Xavier without Fremantle. And I think Marquette has a great offense too. So Xavier's going to be hard to stop that offense. And I think Marquette wins this one.
You agree, Aaron?
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was actually at Jacob's house when I watched Marquette early in the year play against Purdue and gave them a – now, this was before Purdue and Marquette early. were what they are right now. But, man, both those teams were just going at it, and it was a really, really good game. And I'm like, man, Shaka Smart's got something going on over there. Then you see what Purdue turns into, and then you see what Marquette turns into, and it's like, oh, okay, so they're the real deal. So, yeah, I think Xavier's in big trouble without Fremantle. And, again, on the road the only chance they got in this game is if they can shoot lights out, which could happen. I mean, like I alluded to earlier, it's one of those things where they are going to rely 100% on their offense. And if it doesn't show up, they'll lose to anybody. But I agree with Nickel. I think Marquette
games I have watched, especially the home ones, that crowd's electric. Like,
oh, yeah.
Milwaukee backs Marquette pretty well. And
they care.
They play at the same arena the Bucks do. So it fills up. That student section's loud. That's a tough place to play.
You wouldn't have known it at the beginning of the year that you were looking at two potential Final Four candidates with Purdue and Marquette. Right. But
yeah.
Marquette's got something going for them, that's for sure. And then another big game happening on Saturday, which, by the way, tomorrow's games, let alone those three right there, if you throw Indiana Northwestern into the mix – great basketball on tomorrow night. And then the biggest one that I saw on Saturday, number 9 Baylor going to Kansas to take on the 5th-ranked Jayhawks. Whenever those two teams match up, it is electric. So that's going to be another exciting one as well. But we're getting close to about an hour, so let's get to the final segment, our power rankings. We're going to start from number 5 and work your way to the top at number 1. Aaron, I will let you go first here.
So when I was looking at the top 10, I was a little confused because I thought it was a little jumbled up. But number 5, I had Baylor, who I think is like 9 right now. Didn't really understand that. Baylor's won 10 of their last 11 games in the toughest conference in basketball, and their only loss is by 5 points to Texas. It's not like they, you know, it was a bad loss. So don't really understand how they're not in the top 5. But I have them at 5. I have Kansas at 4. This is a team, Jalen Wilson, Grady Dick, I mean – when they're rolling on offense, they literally are a wagon. So,
yeah,
they are legit. Number 3, I have Houston just because, I mean, they haven't lost since that weird Temple loss that they had. I know they're good, but it's one of those things where people really don't know they're good until you start seeing them in March because their conference this year kind of stinks. So, but I do give them respect of knowing how good they are and how well they play defense. Two, I have Purdue. Again, I think they, when they are right, they play some of the most disciplined basketball in the country. They have the most unstoppable force in college basketball. I really like Matt Painter. I think this is a team that has a legit chance to win it all. Again, they're going to lose games. Shit happens. But I think when all things are clicking, they're
just don't lose them in March.
Yeah. Try and find the double digit seed they're going to lose to this year. That's a good game. And then one, Bama. I mean, again, they have all the components to win it all. They got the superstar and Brandon Miller. They play a little bit of defense this year. They don't even need to play great defense. They just need to play some defense with how good they are in offense to just roll. They were my team. Maybe a handful of shows ago, I had said that I think they're my favorite to win the national championship, and I still think they are. Again, I think after this Tennessee game, they got a legit chance to run the table in the SEC. They start playing the not so great portion. I think they avoid a lot of the better teams in the SEC. So, I got them at number one.
Right on. All right, Nicole, you're up.
All right. Well, we have the same five teams. I just have two teams switched between three and four, I believe. So five. I
think nobody has IU in their top five is inaccurate.
Number one in my heart.
Number one in my heart, but not in my top five in the podcast. But yeah, Baylor only one loss to Texas on the road in their past 11 games. They're a team to be reckoned with right now. Their offense is great. The guards, Cryer, Flagger, and then Keontae George is a freshman. He's been stepping up. I think he leads the team in scoring now. So, running through the Big 12 like that, that's good. Like Aaron, like you said earlier, I don't know how they're nine. I feel like they're a better team than nine right now. I think they should be at least five. So that's where I have them. I'm going to go Houston four just because of that Temple loss. And they really haven't played anybody else lately. It's not their fault. It's their conference. It is what it is. It'll be better next year when they go to the Big 12. I think they'll help them out a lot. So,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's just – I know they're always a good team to watch in March and stuff like that. They have Marcus Sasser, Jairus Walker as the freshman. I think they're going to be good, come tournament time. But I like Kansas better, I think. I think if they mashed up, Kansas would be the better team. They have the most quad one wins in college basketball with 11 of them, and they won four of their last five games. I think Kansas is going to be another team in March that's a national title contender. I'm going to have Purdue, too. Still one of the best resumes in college basketball. I mean, it's hard to go on the road in the Big Ten. I don't take anything away from that Northwestern game. Zachy's still one of the best players in college basketball. They're still going to be hard to beat. And then, like you, I have Alabama 1. I think they're the only team in college basketball, at least in the major conferences, that are undefeated in the conference play. So that's huge, especially in the SEC. And then one guy to watch out for other than Brandon Miller, Marcus Sears. He's a transfer from Ohio. Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, those two in the backcourt, Alabama's fun to watch, so I think they're the number one team right now.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with you. Alabama at number one in the AP poll, definitely the best looking team at the moment, especially after Purdue lost to Northwestern and IU. But that you can't take anything away from the Boilermakers. They're still definitely a national title contender. And I was definitely joking about IU, but IU is making their way up into people's conversations. Some people think they should be a top 10 team after the last three games that they had, but you know, everybody has different opinions, I guess. But I think that's all we got for him this week. Like we said numerous times, IU is rolling right now. A tough game against Northwestern tomorrow night. Aaron, do you have any final remarks as we sign off?
Oh, man. If they win that game, things are going to start getting real interesting. Now, don't they play after this game? Isn't it MSU Saturday, which might not happen?
No, Illinois.
Illinois in Bloomington at 11 a.m.
next week.
So let me ask you guys that. Well, so then, I mean, I think that's looking forward. If they beat Northwestern and beat Illinois at home, they're in the top 10.
Because what, that puts them at 20-6? No.
No, 20-7.
Seven. Okay. Seven, yeah.
I think they're in the top 10.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
And if you would have told me that like 3 weeks ago, I would have said you're high as a kite. So
yeah. Episode three, I think half or majority of us were throwing in the towel.
It's been a crazy last month. It's been
roller coaster.
I mean, this is where we expected them to be, though. At the beginning of the season, back to episode one. We had them as Big Ten favorites, as they should have been at that point in time.
No one knew Purdue was going to be this good.
Right. And now they're only two games back of Purdue.
Two and a half games back.
Mackey is going to be nearly impossible. But that's another big if you pick up that game as well, not counting on it. There's just a lot coming up. We can't look ahead, focus in on Northwestern. But, Nickel, any final remarks?
It's just great to finally, you know, not worried about being on the bubble for an IU team.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first time since we were there, I believe the 2016 season, where I actually feel I want to say locked, because you could lose out and maybe miss the tournament, but
that ain't gonna happen.
They're cemented in right now, like, you know, good. So it's a great feeling, being a fan of a college basketball team that's not constantly on the bubble or around the bubble come March, and we're not far from it.
Ironic, the 1 year we don't go to Vegas in March, they're a lock to go to.
Maybe it was just
instead, we could just keep going to Buddy and Pals and Crown Point, which the Hoosiers are undefeated. They're also undefeated since Carter Deacon was brought into this world. He is a Hoosier, ladies and gentlemen.
He is.
That's an inside joke. But I think that's all we got for him, guys.
26 days. Oh, we just lost it. 26
Aaron
days
really wanted to go out with a bang. 26 days until Selection Sunday. We're going to have to do a bigger show, I think, for that. I know Timmy Angel said he wanted to get on at some point, but his Notre Dame team is complete butt cheeks. And Scott Angel's an entertaining one, so maybe we can get Viking Scott on too. We'll see. I'm sure we will have one or two episodes, though, before our March Madness special. But that's all we got here for Episode 5, and we will talk to you next time as our March to Madness continues.
Yeah, I'm okay.